Veri Washington'a Radyo Denge Amerika Guhdarin Hicaz.
This is VOA News, reporting by remote. I'm Joe Ramsey. Ukrainian officials pleaded for more help from the West on Friday, including quicker deliveries of weapons to hold off better armed Russian forces at a critical time in the battle in the East. Heavy fighting was still being reported in Severodonetsk, the small eastern city that has become the focus of Russia's advance and one of the bloodiest flashpoints in a war that has increased financial and physical hardship around the world. With the war in the East now primarily an artillery battle in which Kiev is severely outgunned by Moscow, Ukrainian officials say the tide of events could be turned only if the West fulfills promises to send more and better weaponry, including rocket systems that Washington and others have promised. VOA's Anna Chernikova has more from Kiev.
Ukraine uses from 5,000 to 6,000 artillery shells every day. And basically, Ukraine really needs this long-range systems in order to increase the attack on the artillery system of Russia and to make it more successful and quicker.
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky is calling for more actions from Europe to support Ukraine and stop Russian aggression. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Speaking via video link from Kiev at Copenhagen's Democracy Summit, Zelensky says European countries must not hesitate to cut off any relations with Russia. He warns the European system can lose if words are not backed up with actions. Zelensky's call for Europe to support Ukraine's bid to join the EU is echoed by the President of the European Parliament, Roberta Metsola, also in Copenhagen.
It is high time that it is also given the real opportunity to join our European project.
This is VOA News. On Thursday, the first shipments of millions of bottles of Australian baby formula landed in the United States. Yet the formula shortage continues, with women going to extreme measures to feed their babies. Senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Prezutti reports.
He's excited. Yeah.
One-year-old George crawls and coos as he reaches for his bottle. He's in for a treat this morning. His morning formula is mixed with cereal. Mom Lindsay Cates is slowly transitioning to whole milk as she shows us her last carton of formula.
Would go to the next grocery store and then go to the next grocery store, and I would send my husband out on little manhunts to, you know, check out the CVS, the Target, the Whole Foods to see if we could still get it.
Last month, formula started disappearing from store shelves. Supply chain issues were blamed. Contamination and recalls led to the closure of the nation's largest formula producer, Abbott Laboratories of Michigan. Moms resorted to Facebook and the drastic decision to buy breast milk from strangers.
I'm a mom of five.
Heather Christian of Minnesota, with six-week-old Isabel Jadry, is selling her breast milk for $1 an ounce. One customer buys $50 worth a week.
You can't produce any milk, and you can't go buy the formula because it's not there. What are you going to do to feed your baby?
Abbott's Michigan baby formula plant is now open, but Amy David, who teaches supply chain management at Purdue University, predicts shortages will continue to September.
We also know that some of the ingredients used in baby formula are going to be harder and harder to get because of other things going on in the world, such as the dependence on sunflower oil from Ukraine.
By the time formula cans fill the shelves again, George and other wee ones will be moving on to soft food and cow's milk to grow big and strong. Carolyn Prasuti, VOA News, Washington.
The Vatican said Friday Pope Francis's July 2nd to 7th trip to the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan has been indefinitely postponed because the 85-year-old pontiff's knee ailment. The condition has forced him to use a wheelchair for the last month or so. Recapping our top story, Ukrainian officials pleaded for more help from the West on Friday, including quicker delivery of weapons to hold off better armed Russian forces at a critical time in the battle in the East. Heavy fighting is still being reported in Severodonetsk, a small eastern city that's become the focus of Russia's advance and one of the bloodiest flashpoints in a war that has increased financial and physical hardship around the world. Reporting by remote, I'm Joe Ramsey. VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This year's food security crisis is about access. Next year, because of the expected or the lack of availability and the higher costs of inputs, in particular for fertilizer and fuel, the concern could be about lack of availability, in other words, lack of food.
That was Boubacar Ben Belhassan, the director of the Food and Agriculture Organization Markets and Trade Division, on food security problems. Details coming up. Also, Ghana is aiming to plant 20 million trees today as part of an annual campaign to save forests. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The militaries of Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria have hailed the success of a joint security operation they say has freed 4,500 civilians and killed more than 800 militants since late March. The multinational joint task force agreed to extend Operation Lake Sanity during a meeting yesterday in the Cameroonian town of Mora on the border with Chad and Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé.
The commander of the multinational joint task force, Nigerian Major General Abdul Khalifa Ibrahim, Thursday declared Operation Lake Sanity a success. Ibrahim said 3,000 troops from Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria launched the operation in late March to clear the Lake Chad basin of Islamist insurgents. Speaking on Cameroon's state broadcaster CRTV, he said the task force destroyed scores of houses and vehicles used by Boko Haram militants.
We have cleared a lot of settlements that the Boko Haram were there before, including islands in the Lake Chad. And so far, over 800 of the Boko Haram criminals have been neutralized or killed in Operation Lake Sanity.
Ibrahim said the task force freed 4,500 people held captive by the insurgents who killed 5 of their troops and wounded 20. He said the joint forces also seized large quantities of ammunition and weapons but did not elaborate. At Thursday's meeting in Mora, a Cameroonian town on the border with Chad and Nigeria, the four militaries agreed to extend the operation for 2 more months. Ibrahim said insurgents were hiding in communities around the Lake Chad Basin, which stretches across Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria.
The population have been very good. We are there to protect them. They should continue to cooperate with us. If they have information, they should pass to us. When they see people who are strange in the neighborhood, they should report to the nearest security official.
Migyiyawa Bakari is the governor of Cameroon's far north region, which borders Chad and Nigeria. Speaking through a messaging application from the capital, Maroua, he said during the operation, they have been urging villagers to help them flush out the militants.
Moi personnellement, j'ai engagé une tournée de redynamisation, de prise de conscience.
Bakari says he personally embarked on an awareness-raising campaign in border towns and villages. He says he spoke with clerics, chiefs, and community leaders and elites who feared payback from Boko Haram. Bakari says he told them to immediately distance themselves from terrorist groups who are responsible for disorder and conflict in their areas. Nigerian Islamist Boko Haram began launching attacks at home in 2009 before spreading to neighboring Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. The Multinational Joint Task Force of the Lake Chad Basin Commission was created in 2014 to fight the militants and has about 11,000 troops and rescue workers. The United Nations says the conflict has left more than 36,000 people dead, mainly in Nigeria, while 3 million have been forced to flee their homes. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Princess Marie Esmeralda thinks the Belgian king's visit to the Democratic Republic of Congo could lead to a new relationship between the two countries. The princess is the great-grandniece of Belgium's King Leopold II, whose brutal rule over what is now the DRC in the late 1800s left millions dead. The princess spoke today with my colleague, Venusti Nshimiamana, with VOA Central Africa Service.
I really think it's an historical event. Of course, King Philip had already expressed his regrets 2 years ago in a letter to President Tshisekedi, but this speech was pronounced in front of the parliament in the DRC, and it has really an importance. The fact that the first king of all the king of the Belgians recognized that the colonial power, the colonial past of Belgium was racist, was discriminatory. I think this is really important and will allow, I think, a new page to be opened in the relation between Belgium and the DRC.
Clearly, King Philip set the tone for the new era of relations with the former colony by stressing that Belgians of nowadays generation are not at all guilty of what happened in the past. What do you think the renewal of bilateral relations between Belgium and DRC will look like?
It should be open, it should be honest and transparent. Now that we accept to face our colonial past, to recognize the crimes, now we can have a really open relationship and work on cooperation, of course, on assistance and fair trade. And yes, I think now things can be completely different.
That was Princess Marie Esmeralda of Belgium. She spoke with Venusti Nshimiamana with VOA Central Africa Service. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization warns global hunger is likely to increase because of soaring food prices due largely to uncertainties created by the war in Ukraine. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The Food and Agriculture Organization's latest Food Outlook report forecasts international food prices will hit record highs this year, lifting global import payments to more than $1.8 trillion. The FAO says economically vulnerable people in the least developed countries in sub-Saharan Africa and net importing developing countries will suffer most from food insecurity due to rising costs. The director of the FAO's Markets and Trade Division, Boubacar Ben Belhassan, says the tightening of markets is expected to persist for all commodities this year. He attributes that to steep price hikes, the frequency and intensity of extreme weather events, market uncertainties due to the war in Ukraine, and sudden trade policy changes.
This year's food security crisis is about access. Next year, because of the expected or the lack of availability and the higher costs of inputs, in particular for fertilizer and fuel, the concern could be about lack of availability, in other words, lack of food.
The FAO reports enough food is available to feed the hungry this year, but it is not getting to the people who need it. Ben Belhassan says both Ukraine and Russia are major producers of commodities such as wheat, maize, and sunflower oil. But the war in Ukraine, he notes, is preventing those commodities from being exported to countries in greatest need.
From our estimation, we see that depending on how much this shock leads in terms of deficit or gap or reduction in the export availability for those food commodities from both Ukraine and Russia, it could lead in anywhere between 11 to 19 million more hungry people, but that's chronic hunger for 2022-2023.
The World Food Program warns of an impending catastrophe and mass starvation if Russia does not end its blockade of Ukraine's Black Sea ports. The United Nations currently is trying to find a so-called package deal to allow Ukrainian-produced food to be safely and securely exported through the Black Sea. The deal also would allow for unimpeded access to global markets for Russian food and fertilizers. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Eleven military police were killed in northern Burkina Faso yesterday. An army statement says armed men attacked a security post in Sitenga in Seno province. The gendarmes fought back but were outnumbered. The West African country is battling militant groups, some linked to Al-Qaeda and Islamic State. These groups have been waging an insurgency which has killed thousands across Burkina Faso and neighboring Mali and Niger. Also yesterday, the army says four military police were killed in an attack in the western province of Kosi, and two people were killed in an attack on a gold mine in the north. The Botswana government says inmates will not be provided condoms despite concerns over rising HIV infection in prisons, but that it is looking at how other countries deal with the issue. Authorities argue that having sex in prison is against the law. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mukondisi Dube has the details.
Commissioner of Prisons Dana Marate says there is no intention to provide inmates with condoms, despite the National Assembly's concerns over HIV infections in incarceration.
This is a very dicey situation to deal with. We can't deny the fact that there are instances whereby prisoners may have sex with each other. And that is an unlawful act that is not allowed. We'll be legalizing this unlawful act by availing condoms in prisons. And I mean, the prison setup itself is such that you cannot have sex in prison. Those are some of the rights that have been curtailed by incarceration.
To address the challenge, Marathi says they are considering introducing open prisons where inmates are allowed to visit their families over weekends.
We have opened ourselves to learn from others who have progressed in these areas, and we benchmarked from Zimbabwe where they run open prisons. Open prisons are prisons whereby a prisoner may be given a weekend to go home. And it's part of their integration program. We're looking at that and see whether it's something that we can try here. Can we look at our laws and see that we can accommodate that?
The move to deny inmates access to condoms comes at a time when Botswana has decriminalized same-sex relations. Cindy Gelemi, director of the human rights organization, the Botswana Network on Ethics, HIV, AIDS and Law, has criticized the government's decision not to provide condoms to inmates, this particularly in light of the recent court ruling decriminalizing homosexuality.
In the past, the ministry and the Department of Correctional Services had indicated that they are unable to provide condoms to prisoners because of Section 164 of the Penal Code, which was recently decriminalized. So it basically means that the ministry has got no basis for their refusal to provide condoms to prisoners. And also, it's lack of accountability in that for the longest time, we have been calling for comprehensive access to HIV services within prisons.
Botswana's HIV prevalence rate in prisons is estimated at 14% of the nearly 4,000 inmates. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Habrone, Botswana.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Iheyes Wuhib in Washington. Please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Ghana is aiming to plant 20 million trees Friday as part of an annual campaign to save forests that have been depleted by climate change and illegal mining. The UN says Ghana has one of the highest losses of rainforest in the world, with its forest cover only a fifth of what it was a century ago. Kenneth Mensah reports from Accra, Ghana.
Ghana is losing its rainforest at a rapid rate due to land clearing for cocoa farms, mining and illegal logging. According to the Forestry Commission, between 2019 and 2021 alone, the West African country lost over 300 square kilometers of primary forest, forcing timber processors in the country to import trees from neighboring countries. Speaking at a public event on Friday to begin the national tree planting event dubbed Green Ghana Day, President Nana Akufo-Addo said the economic impact of forest degradation is alarming.
Here in Ghana, we've lost some 100,000 acres of natural forest in the last decade alone. Our timber industry, which generated jobs for thousands of people, is suffering. The odumu, wawa, mahogany, sapele, and several other wood species of this timber industry are also depleting at an alarming rate.
Lands and Natural Resources Minister Samuel Abujinapo told VOA the situation is worsening and calls for immediate action.
We have a serious crisis on our hands. And that is why the president has brought up a two-pronged strategy to deal with this matter. The first strategy is to ensure that we halt deforestation, which is why we are not even granting concessions for harvesting of timber species anymore. Then the second pillar is what we call aggressive afforestation and reforestation, which is culminated into this Green Ghana.
Across Ghana, Friday, the Forestry Commission handed out trees to schools, businesses, religious groups, and other organizations to distribute to their members. The commission also gave seedlings to individuals and asked them to plant their seeds at home. The inaugural Green Ghana Day was held last June, during which 7 million trees were planted. Jinapo said it was highly successful.
Last year, we targeted 5 million seedlings. We ended up planting 7 million seedlings. The biggest issue to do with any afforestation or reforestation scheme or really not so much to do with the planting per se, but the survival rate. I'm very happy to report the Forestry Commission has done a nationwide assessment, come with a firm conclusion, which is well-grounded, that 80% of the seedlings we planted last year have survived.
Environmental activist Juan Ofori says that only a sustained, well-funded program can protect Ghana from the ravages of climate change.
We've lost over 80% of our forest cover as a nation. I mean, greenhouse effect, climate change, global warming, and they're real. If for nothing at all, let's look at the rainfall pattern over the years. So we have to do something about it. Otherwise, we are doomed.
She said the Green Ghana initiative will be meaningless unless Ghanaians make it a part of their culture to care for trees all year round.
We have to have a mindset change. They realize that trees are for life. When the last tree dies, the last man dies.
Planting 20 million trees in a single day may sound impossible. Balance Minister Jinapo says Ghanaians should aim high, given the current health of the country's forests. Kent Mensah for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
Kofi Olomide is one of Africa's greatest living legends in music. With over 400 songs and 30 albums to his name, he has defined Congolese music and dance culture from the earliest days of the Congolese rumba sensation to the present. He's a songwriter, a singer with a trademark voice of incredible range and powerful bass register, as well as band leader and producer. Heather Maxwell, host of VOA's Music Time in Africa, spoke with him earlier this week at VOA Studios in Washington to learn more about his recent activities that take him on new paths in life.
You have just been appointed cultural ambassador for Congo. You're also a diplomat and have recently received the African Legend Award from AFRIMA 2021. These are just recent accomplishments. What do you plan to do with your ambassadorship?
Well, I will be unable to explain everything I want to do
in English. You know, I'm a Frenchman.
Yes.
My English is like
it's
that.
It's okay. You can speak it in French if you like.
J'ai commencé ma mission d'ambassadeur.
I started my mission as an ambassador going to Belgium, the country that colonized Congo, because I wanted, as an ambassador of Congolese culture, to ask Belgium to repatriate the musical instrument and the artwork that Belgium took from Congo during the colonization. There are about 8,000 musical instruments that Belgium has at its Tervuren Museum. It's an immense wealth, and also an incalculable number of art objects there on exhibit. It's a fight that started before me, but I decided to ask the Belgian government politely to repatriate to Congo as a compensation for all that we have lost culturally, and build a museum worthy of its name to exhibit our object there. But Mr. Guido, who is the director of the museum in Tervuren, said, "Yes, but Kofi, you are nice. You have come nicely. The politicians who came before you were aggressive and threatening. But with you, we feel that we can dialogue. But we want to alert you that Congo is taken with Belgium because we are its old colonizer. But in Washington, there are more than 15,000 musical instruments there. So one day I'm going to ask the boss, the number one, the chief of state, to bring me here and meet with the Americans so that America can also repatriate that and build us a museum. Also, the Congolese rumba has become intangible cultural heritage. It has this title, and I'm going to ask the Congolese Senate and the Congolese Parliament to adopt a law that the history of the rumba becomes a subject taught in our schools. This amongst all the steps that I've started to make. But I revealed that at the conference, there are 5 acts in total, but these are the 2 that I've started.
Oh, parlons de la rumba. Is soukous or ndombolo still the number one music genre dansante in Congo?
In Africa.
You think?
Yes.
Yes, but before that, there was mutuashi, folk dance coming from country, the provinces, from our ancestors. There is Makwandungu. There was Mbonga, folk dances coming from villages of our fathers and our grandfathers. And then, to not stop the fun, there was Soukous, Ndombolo, there is Chacho. All those are variants. Oh, look, he's dancing already over there. So there are variants. It's like the supermarket, right? One finds shelves of cheese, but it's all the same supermarket.
You don't see that any other styles may eclipse?
No, ça va continuer.
No, it will continue. No one can stop culture. No one can stop intelligence. No one can stop creativity. It will continue to surface our territories, from our forests, from our villages. It will continue. No, it won't stop. Because our kids, today the music that's made, there is little color that comes from the West, from America, but that mixes with the African Congolese roots.
You can hear more of Heather Maxwell's conversation with Kofi Olomide at Music Time in Africa on voaafrica.com. You can also keep up with all the latest music news on the continent with Heather on Facebook and Twitter. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Patrick Dea, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays.